I'm Chris Farrell from the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other geeky podcasts over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. I am Stargate Pioneer. People that don't like me call me Star Pie. My friends call me SP. And your reporters for this 13th episode of Season 4 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Your next opponent won't have my patience or my mercy.
And Neil.
You're very handsome, not especially bright.
And I picked a Felicity quote, as I always do, and the one I picked was, apparently, now that he knows what I do, that we're both vigilantes, we have something in common. This podcast is recorded on Thursday, February 11th, 2016, live on the Blab streaming service. We are just three guys that discuss the TV show Arrow. Just a little reminder that I am not a comic expert. I'm enjoying reading up on comics now, but I'm really a science fiction guy, or sci-fi guy, or skiffy guy, if you prefer. But I'm catching up with the comic lore just a little bit, thanks to great folks like Chris.
Make mine Marvel?
And Neil.
I don't discriminate, man. Come on. A good comic is a good comic. Doesn't matter who made it.
I only read one DC book right now.
Killing me.
Chris, you read a lot of Star Wars, don't you?
I have an addiction, and it is the wars and the stars.
There you go. I see them on the racks all the time at the comic book store. I'll tell you the secret. Comixology for Star Wars. But everything else is hard copy. All right. One more question to ask you, though, Chris. So since Star Wars is kind of a Marvel comic, do they do the digital thing, too?
They do.
Well, maybe I should do that.
So I get a digital redemption for all the Star Wars books I buy.
All right, I might look into that. But we're talking about DC Comics tonight. So just a little reminder that we're going to be talking about what happened in Episode 13 of the CW television show Arrow in Season 4, as well as news, articles, announcements that have dropped in the past week and that could impact future episodes. It will contain spoilers at that point, so consider yourself warned. All of our past shows, minus about four, can be found in the archives at GunnaGeek.com. So, just a little promo here. Chris and I are going to be at a convention in March. It's going to be C2E2 on March 18th, and we've got a little audio for you about that.
Hey everybody, it's Naki from All Things Good and Nerdy. Want to learn more about networking and podcasting? Join me, Stargate Pioneer, Chris Farrell-Farrell, Cody Goff, and Willie Nelson at C2E2. We'll be having a panel in the workshop room. We'll be talking about podcasting for your everyday life, as well as the benefits of being on such an awesome network like Gunna Geek. Stay tuned, we'll have more details coming soon. We just wanted to let you know that we'll be there. Come high-five us and have a great time. See you later.
So, we will be there. You heard a little bit about it from Naki. We will give you exact times as it gets closer, because we have an approximate time, but we don't want to tell you that just in case it gets moved later. But just keep your eyes on the schedule for C2E2, as well as next week, we'll be going over a more comprehensive Gunna Geek Network convention panel schedule for 2016. I will tell you that as we were recording this, our pals at Gallifrey Public Radio are at Gallifrey One or traveling to Gallifrey One out in Los Angeles. So they'll be bringing you all sorts of Doctor Who goodness on Gallifrey Public Radio. But again, I find myself distracted, because why are we here? We're here to talk Arrow, aren't we, Neil?
Yes, and we are talking Sins of the Father, Episode 13, Season 4, air date of Wednesday, February 10th, 2016, directed by Gordon Verhul. Now, he has directed 25 previous episodes of Arrow, so if the name is familiar, that's why. He has also done 20 episodes of Smallville, breaking the previous record set by the director last week, who did 15. So the CW is strong with this one. Writers, we talked about this again, Ben Sokolowski and Keto Shimizu, the A-Team. Ben Sokolowski has done 23 episodes as a producer, 14 episodes as writer and or teleplay, and he's produced 20 episodes of The Flash and written 3 episodes of The Flash as well. And Keto Shimizu, 23 episodes of Arrow as executive story editor, 10 episodes as writer, 7 episodes as the entire series of the animated CW Seed series Vixen, and 46 episodes as producer or co-producer and as writer of season 2.5 in the comics. So definitely the A-Team for this pretty important and pivotal episode.
Important? I thought this is just filler, guys. It's a filler episode.
I wish. We'll get into that in a second.
Everything changes.
Just a little. Think if we had any illusions about what this show was going to be going forward, they were completely dashed or confirmed, depending on what you were thinking, this week. All right. So we start every episode out by talking about the generic theme, or we try to anyway, when I don't get distracted, talking about the generic theme for the episode. And of course, we start with the title of the episode. This title is Sins of the Father. So we have multitudes of father-son relationships talking about in this episode, don't we, Chris?
We do, and some of it's father-daughter even.
Ew.
Ooh. I think the obvious one, we'll start out, we get to deal with the repercussions of Ra's al Ghul's sin, which is, I don't know, nearly killing Thea to try and convert Oliver last season to make him be the demon's head.
That one kind of played into this episode pretty strongly.
It's only been building up since he stabbed her last season.
Yeah. And behind door two, we have father number two, Malcolm Merlyn, whose sins are the undertaking, brainwashing Thea to kill a member of Teen Arrow, and effectively killing Sarah.
And his own son.
And his own son, yeah, in the undertaking. He's, yeah, not father of the year.
Batting 1,000! Okay, and then in door number three, we have the calculator, whose sins are basically leaving Felicity. And I actually think there was a bit more, especially considering Felicity and Mama Smoke's conversation. I think there was quite a bit more behind that that just was unsaid, but he has plenty to account for.
And let's go with father number four, who made a cameo by way of mentions. Ollie in his flashback talked about his father, Robert Queen, whose sin was being a not very nice guy associating with the undertaking, but he was the only father that has been redeemed because his sacrifice impacted Ollie. So four major fathers in this episode.
So my question for you guys is, if we had to pick which one of these guys was the best father, which is it?
You know, there is one father combination that's not on here, Oliver and William. Yeah, you can't leave that out. Yeah. Especially yeah. Since it comes into play at the end of the episode.
Well, and Diggle is a dad too, but we didn't really see that in this episode.
So is Captain Lance.
That's true.
Yeah, there's a lot of daddies.
And we did see Daddy Lance in this episode. So there you go. There's a total of seven dads. Yeah. So given the list that we started out with the four doors, a little bit of sleep-deprived SP going on and over-caffeinated SP going on tonight. Okay, so we started out with the four dads. Which one is the best between Ra's al Ghul, Malcolm, Calculator, and Robert Queen? I would like to say Robert, but I'm not going to, because I think he chose the coward's way out.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. All right. So effectively, because based on resources, it was his sacrifice that allowed Ollie to make it to the island. I'm going to say Robert, but I'm going to say it was Robert because realistically, he's the only one that had a redemption arc. You know, at least Robert gave the notebook to Ollie in season one to allow him to begin, you know, the anti-undertaking. The calculator tried, but really didn't have a redemption arc. Malcolm is so far away from a redemption arc, it's not funny. And Ra's wasn't repentant. Ra's, you know, think about the blood poisoning assassins running around Starling City. Not so much of a redemption arc at the end of that episode. So I have to go Robert. Chris, what do you think?
For me, it's going to be Malcolm because I want to be related to John Barrowman. No, I'm kidding. In all seriousness, I'd probably have to go Robert because out of all those characters, he's probably the least evil and kind of, they set up the fact he was seeing the error of his ways, at least. He just wasn't sure how to get out. Sure, he might have been slightly cowardly in the way he went out, but I don't think he had any choice.
Could you imagine the holidays with John Barrowman? Could you imagine that? There would not be a boring second in the day.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, 10-4. So, but now, that was how we got the name. Obviously, there was lots of fathers, lots of sins of the fathers of our four bad guys that we just talked about. But was there a theme? Was it a redemption arc? Was it love thy father? What was it, just how many ninja assassins can we put in one episode?
I've got the theme for this because it's been bugging me since I saw the episode last night. It's the final freaking nail in the coffin that anything DC Cinematic Universe related is off limits to Arrow. We don't care about you. We'll throw a little bit to the Flash, but Arrow, you guys are done. You're off. You're over with. You're not getting crap. Ugh, hate you, DC.
Thanks for setting up everything. Now we're taking everything that you were using. We want our toys back.
Ugh, you guys make me sad.
It was a great episode, except for the fact that they disbanded the League of Assassins at the end. All the cool toys are gone. There's nothing left. They got to start from scratch, aside from Damian Dark, and we know that he's probably not going to be making it past this season because Neil McDonough is probably going to be on contract with somebody else next year. So it's just, it's like, everything that I loved for the show, it's gone. You're making me sad.
And I have to agree with Cage and Sean in the chat, though. How long do you think that's going to last? Listen, you've got how many unemployed assassins right now? Most of them probably still have all their stuff back at Nanda Parbat. It's not like, well, it's done. I'm going to go away now. No, I'm sure there is not a retirement plan or healthcare from the, you know, from the League of Assassins once you're let go. They probably don't have 2 weeks severance. You know, that's
2 weeks.
If Merlin were to go, hey, listen, no. What she said, no. You know, we're still doing this. I'm sure he would have some followers.
I think we'll run into pockets of the former league that are off trying to continue the mission of it, things like that. I'm not super bummed about them dissolving it, though, because it kind of shows the character growth you had with Nyssa. She doesn't want to fulfill her father's mission anymore. She kind of wants to be her own person. Heading up the league and making sure it continued was her father's legacy, not necessarily hers.
Why was she fighting Malcolm for the leadership at the end there? Why didn't she go, take your ring back?
Because she didn't want Malcolm to be in charge of that. I mean, would you trust Malcolm Merlyn in charge of the League of Assassins?
Oliver Queen did.
Yeah, Oliver was dumb.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't want my toys, so I'm going to break them because you can't have them. Like, come on.
Oh, okay, going back to Oliver. Oliver's been dumb throughout this whole thing with Merlyn as being the Ra's al Ghul. Well, he's Thea's father, so I need to give him a chance. No, he killed your best friend. He tried to kill you. He beat the crap out of you in season 1 before you killed him. You don't trust Malcolm Merlyn. You used him last season because you had no choice. Doesn't mean that things stay hunky-dory and happy this season when he's heading up the League of Assassins. No.
And then in his grand plan, let's just piss him off even more and let's see what he could do now.
So his grand plan was dumb. When have we ever seen Malcolm Merlyn tell the truth or follow through on things? Oh, sure, I'll gladly meet with Nyssa and give her my ring in exchange for the cure. Everyone had to be going, oh, he's going to screw us over.
Yeah. And when everybody on Team Arrow says, you should kill him. No, really, you should kill him. Yeah, but I'm bright and happy and shiny this season. No, kill Merlyn. Everybody is telling you to kill Merlyn.
But that also bugged me a little bit because they've all made this big point of, Oliver, you don't have to kill anymore. Oliver, be a good guy. You don't have to do that anymore. And he finally does it. And this has happened before. I can't remember when. I want to say it was the end of last season with Roz, I think it was. And they go, oh, Oliver, you got to kill now. And I'm like, you've been trying to tell him not to kill for how long? And he finally stops doing it and becomes a hero. And you're like, oh, you got to kill again. This is the second time it's happened. I'm like, oh, I hate you all. I understand why they're saying it. And it makes sense story-wise. But at the same time, they should have probably acknowledged the fact of, hey, I know you're trying to stay on this good path, but you've got no choice. And then it's kind of the hero's journey to realize, I don't have to kill him. I can find another way around this instead of just acting like a doormat to Malcolm Merlyn.
I got to call it out. StarSaber_222 in the chat said, Malcolm sure got his severance package.
Oh. All right. Hashtag severance package.
There you go. I'm loving that hashtags out of these episodes. We didn't finish the discussion on the theme for the discussion. I called out what my theme was. Neil, what's your theme?
I couldn't figure it out. I thought about, well, there's no real redemption. There's no real trust issues. Maybe it's breaking ties with the past, but the only person who did that was Nyssa. There was no way that the flashback really tied into the current timeline, except for the reference to Robert Queen. I was stuck. I was just like, I don't know. I'm sure there is. Like, some film or TV scholar is going to say, no, it's obvious, but I'm at a loss.
Chris?
My theme is don't trust Malcolm Merlyn.
Good words to live by. Absolutely.
Never in this episode should you have trusted Malcolm Merlyn, basically, is what it comes down to.
Never.
Maybe that's the moral of the story. The moral of the story is don't trust Malcolm.
So the theme is Malcolm will turn on you every chance he has.
And knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe! Okay.
Malcolm Merlyn!
All right. This is one of the things that I liked about this episode. Great fight scenes, left, right, and backwards. You had combo packages and whatever. The choreography as the season goes on is getting better and better, where if it's the actors that are getting better, or just they know they need these big battle scenes or whatever, or maybe they're competing with Legends of Tomorrow. I don't know, but the fight scenes have been great. It's a different genre than in Legends of Tomorrow. It's the more the street thug and finesse ninja sort of moves, and it's not the highfalutin guns blazing everywhere and people in flight as it is in Legends of Tomorrow. But this is good fight, and this is something you do not get in The Flash.
That's because everyone isn't as fast as The Flash, or The Flash isn't faster than everyone else. Flash fight scenes are easy. Blur, blur, run, run, hit, run away. This one is punch him in the face, punch him, someone finally falls.
Or in this episode, it was sword, 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 flurry of arrows, some civilian casualties, more swords, more arrows, more martial arts. Yeah, puff of smoke, gone. Which was pretty damn cool.
It was pretty sweet. It was pretty cool to see that fight in the middle of Star City, and you're going, whoa, this is almost cooler than when Slade took all his minions through Starling City in season two.
That was really cool when they went out from the alley and spilled out into the street. I think you got a real sense that this is not just taking place in some back alleys and some warehouses. This is a fight for the city.
Yet the League straight up doesn't care about casualties. They're out there to do their mission, which is to take out the other League in their mind. And if someone gets in the way, tough cookies, they're taking them out.
Yeah, and that was what they kind of were all worried about at the beginning, that there were going to be collateral damage, or there was going to be collateral damage, there were going to be civilian casualties. And sure enough, you start seeing those scenes, you're like, wow, yeah, arrows are striking civilians left, right, and center, and they got to stop this. It adds a sense of urgency to why they care about the two warring factions of the League of Assassins.
And I learned that the Canary can push back an entire horde of assassins. That was pretty neat.
For like 3 seconds.
It still worked for 3 seconds. I mean, that's not something I could do. Respect.
She needs to dial it up so that she's like shattering eardrums and just turn it up just a bit.
It just needs to get Cisco'd a little bit more.
I was thinking the same thing, my friend.
There you go.
Well, speaking of Laurel, she did actually kick a lot of ass this episode. She held her own. She was pivotal to the discussions with Nyssa. She pushed back, as you said, that horde. So, Chris, you are the hardest critic on the network about Laurel. On the scale of 1 to 10 on your annoyance factor, 10 being, oh my God, I had to turn it off. 1 being, oh yeah, I really love this. She wasn't annoying at all.
3.
Wow.
So, why 3 and not 1?
Because there's still the lingering taste in my mouth from past episodes. No, in all honesty, it's because I keep waiting for that character to just say something stupid or selfish that makes me angry, regardless, because that character always does that. And it didn't happen this week, but I'm always kind of sitting there going, okay, what's she going to say now that really annoys me?
She came through for this episode. I mean, she dealt with Nyssa, to me, and she dealt with Nyssa very effectively, very efficiently. They have the bond of Sarah between them, of their either current or past relationships with her. And I think that that has bonded them a little bit to the akin of sisters-in-law. Now, they're not officially sisters-in-law, but it's like they're sisters-in-law now.
I like how that relationship has developed. I hope we get more of Nyssa going forward. And I got to say, Laurel, she's had a great mini arc the last three episodes, from talking with Ollie two episodes ago to being kind of instrumental in the last one and her heroic pose at the end of the big explosion. And now this one where she took front stage. So let's go Laurel.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Laurel buddies.
Yeah, to the grave.
Little fist bump there, Neil.
Yeah, fist bump.
Yeah, there we go. Be careful not to actually touch the camera.
No, I stayed away.
So does Nyssa have a cage contract? You know, cage quota in her contract? Is that what's going on?
Several times a year, Nyssa must be in a cage in the cave, or the quiver, or what, or the foundry, or whatever we're going to call it. But it's in her contract. Yeah, I think so.
Again, I will go back to the Hallmark Channel holiday movies. She really shone in those movies. I'm hoping she's in some new ones next year. So just hoping.
Did she use her Nyssa accent?
No, she just was a normal Canadian, I guess, in New York, I guess, is where she was.
Hey, listen, let's talk about the one fight scene we didn't talk about. Let's talk about Ollie versus Malcolm. Did you think it was going to end like that? I had no idea. I just held my breath at the start of that fight. I'm like, oh, it's on.
I thought it would be much closer, and then I laughed because Malcolm got Skywalkered.
I thought the tattoo was going to come into play or something. I was like, this is not what it appears. It's not going to be one or the other, because we've already done that multiple times. This is going to be something completely different. I did not call the Skywalker moment, though. And it was kind of cool because the camera was just right there on the hand. It was like looking up at everybody, but it was looking at the hand. So you're like, oh, I know exactly what happened. Like if you were just half paying attention or whatever, and you're like, what just happened? You knew exactly what happened by looking at those after shots.
Yeah, so I thought at first that Oliver just run his sword pretty much straight down Malcolm's chest and split him open until I saw the hand on the ground. I was like, oh, no, he got his hand. Ew.
I'll agree. That's exactly what I thought. It's like, oh, my gosh, Malcolm's going to die. No, nope, just the hand.
He's going to die eventually, though.
Well.
He's going to get a demon hand now or something, I think.
They have to do something. He's an archer. He is the Dark Archer. I think to bring him back, they got to figure something out. And listen, I think we've joked that Marvel has a hand thing. I think DC has an archer hand thing.
Hmm.
It is everywhere. So we've talked about Green Arrow from 2046 coming up in Legends of Tomorrow. One-armed, the same one-armed Green Arrow that we have in the Dark Knight comics. We've talked about the fact that Roy in the comics lost an arm. I think we talked about that last week with his run-in with Prometheus as Arsenal. And now this week, Malcolm Merlyn loses a hand / forearm. DC has a hand thing too, guys. Not just Marvel.
See, I think they're just setting up crossbows because Daryl's so popular from The Walking Dead. That's what I think is going on.
There you go.
All right. Felicity, my gal Felicity. She had some awesome moments. Not a lot of great quotes, by the way. I rewatched the entire episode. I'm like, I need a great Felicity quote. There's some great Felicity dialogue, but not the traditional Felicity quotes that we normally get. And to be honest, I mean, this is a little out of character for her because she's struggling between what her mom is telling her, what she knows from her history with her dad, and what she's seen. And then the way he revealed himself to her, I was like, oh crap, something's going to go down. You know what came to my mind? It was the Joker scene from the original Batman movie when they're in the restaurant. And I thought, oh, this something's really going to go down here. And it wasn't. It was just a reveal of, hey, check this out.
Was that your Jack Nicholson?
No, that was the calculator. Jack Nicholson.
I wasn't sure which path we were going down for a second.
No, I'll have to practice up for my Jack Nicholson.
I did not expect the reveal. Like when he said Overwatch, I was like,
oh,
crap.
I was like, it's on now.
Yeah.
I think the tone of the episode changed at that very point where you were thinking this is going to be a great episode. And then it ended the way it did. I'm just so, you chucked ending me. Dang you. Or How I Met Your Mother ended me or whatever. Just within the episode.
Really? You didn't like the ending?
No, I didn't. If you guys believe that the League of Assassins is coming back, that's one thing. I'm thinking it's really taken away by DC or Warner Brothers or somebody is taking it away because they've taken away all the great toys.
Well, okay. And that's fair. I get your frustration there, but I'm thinking, you know, call it the shawarma, call it the pre-post credit scene, whatever you want. When Neil McDonough is meeting with Malcolm Merlyn.
Right.
And he goes, I know what's really going to hurt him because you know, he knows about William And he posed that scenario to him. It's the city or William. What do you choose? It's like, I'd find a third option. It's like, okay, so you're not willing to sacrifice your son. That's what you hold most dear right now. Guess what he's telling Hive about? He's throwing William into the fire.
He is. And as much as I want to see Anna Hopkins back in the show, because I really do, I really like her as an actor, and I think she should be Captain Marvel. Hashtag Anna Hopkins for Captain Marvel. But I think that this is going to be hard for me to watch, because you're talking about threatening a kid. And I think this is the first real time that we've had a kid, a relative kid, being threatened. It would be like Sarah being threatened. I'm talking about the daughter of Lila and Diggle being threatened. It's just somewhere that I don't want to see the show go. And you know it is going there. So what is Oliver going to do? I don't know. It's going to be hard to watch. That particular episode, if it's next week or whatever, we got about, what, 9 or 10 episodes left. It's going to be hard.
Yeah. And shall we jump to who's in the grave? Because this episode really made me question who's in the grave again. I think we know that the gloves are off, that Malcolm is out for revenge. And if we've learned anything from Malcolm, he fights dirty, he fights mean, and he's pretty vindictive. So I think, and we talked about this when we discussed that article last week about conspiracy theories on who's in the grave, I think that him is Malcolm Merlyn. I think the amount of anger in Felicity's voice is, and it revisits what we heard this entire episode, you have to kill him. Like, you didn't listen to any of us mid-season, and look what's happened. Now you need to kill him.
Yeah, so along those lines, I was thinking in terms of, it's Thea that's killed, and because you have the mixture of the calculator and Malcolm involved, and the him, kill him, would be Malcolm in this particular case. But Thea popped up to the top of the list in the realm of the plausibility, but it still could be her mom. It still could be Mama Smoke, because the calculator is involved too.
Here's a new conspiracy theory, and Chris, I'd love to get your thoughts on this one after, but what if it's the calculator who dies? What if, you know, he sprung from prison, but still tries to do well by Felicity? He's in the middle of his redemption arc, and it's the calculator who gets killed off while he's trying to redeem himself. That way, the writers don't have to kill any strong fan connection characters. Like, a lot of people love the Mama Smoke and the Lance character, so why ruin our ratings or piss off our fans? Let's kill off somebody relatively new that has an emotional connection to Felicity and set up next season with Malcolm. So I have changed my prediction. Calculator in the grave with the rope in the dining room, and Malcolm is the murderer.
So I've kind of moved off my theory that Damian Dark is the person who's responsible for putting someone in the grave. I'm thinking it's either Malcolm or the calculator who puts someone in the grave. So I don't think it is calculator in the grave itself. Now, who it is, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be Thea, because Malcolm still loves his daughter, but that's what's going to be so weird, is he's trying to get vengeance on Oliver, which is going to then in turn get vengeance on Thea. So his motivations are skewed, but he's probably slightly insane after losing a hand. So as for who's in it, it's not going to be William. They want you to think that. And that's too dark, I think, for them to go and kill a kid on a TV show like this. I could be wrong.
Still going to be in jeopardy, though.
Yes, I'm thinking that what you're going to see is just what Brian just said in the chat room. His mother, Anna Hopkins' character, is going to die, I think, SP, to save her son. And then you're going to have that weird dynamic of Oliver's going to be like, what do? I have a kid now I have to take care of.
And he still hasn't told Felicity that he has a son.
And that's why Felicity doesn't have the ring in the limo.
And he proposed again, and yeah, the whole ring thing. Now, to support some of your theories, there's a throwaway line of dialogue at the beginning of this episode, and I'm going to just read it off to you. It's not what you think. My employer, emphasis on employer, my work is hardly diabolical. Now, some of that, I think, was just smoke and mirrors. But the fact that he said my employer seems to me that it is one of the gentlemen that we're talking about, whether it's Damian or Malcolm. I almost said Roz. Malcolm or Damian.
Baron von Ryder, if he's back in current time.
Could be.
Or could be setting up a third player we don't know about that is going to be the big bad next season.
It could be that the Amanda Waller who died was a life model decoy, and it's Amanda Waller.
Yes, Waller's in charge. Hashtag Waller still lives.
Yeah, that could be. Do we not catch anything else on the episode? Did you guys want to talk about anything else in the episode that we haven't caught yet?
I think I'm good.
All right.
When are they going to get John Barrowman a robotic hand like they got for Clark Gregg in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Nah, it's got to be a mystical one with like engravings and carvings and demon heads built onto it that can still pull a bow. That would be badass.
Well, the technology exists. I mean, Max Lord knows how to build one. So there you go. I just crossed the streams. You guys didn't call it.
How about next week?
What's up next week, Neil?
Next week, we have episode 14, Code of Silence. It's going to be airing on Wednesday, February 17th. The summary is that Team Arrow uncovers Hive's plan to take them out for good, leading Lance to wonder if Donna is better off without him, and Oliver to consider telling Felicity about his son. All right, you've been waiting for it for the second time ever. The director is James Bam Bam Bamford.
Fantastic.
It's going to be one of those episodes. Oh. The fights are going to be amazing. And the writers, Wendy Miracle and Oscar Ballardrama.
Wow.
So, yeah, if we thought we had the A-team this week writing, they're doing back-to-back with top-tier writing staff and producers. And, you know, one of the most dynamic new directors on the scene. So, definitely can't wait for next week.
And the fact that basically, I'm just going to call her this at this point in time, the showrunner of Arrow for this season, Wendy Miracle, is helming the writing for this episode, says a lot. They want to get it right, whatever that is. And they have to convince me to stay with the show at this point in time, even though I've got this podcast and everything. They have pissed me off now by stripping us of lots of stuff. And I'm getting angry.
Well, the problem is, or the question is, and we'll probably get into this later in the news, did they have a choice?
I'm not blaming the DC creative team, or the Arrow creative team. I'm blaming what's going on outside of it, and we'll get to that in a second. So now we get to the point in the episode where we talk about Easter eggs. It started out as the Bat checklist, it moved to the DC checklist, and now we've found this great issue that we can go ahead and talk about is Easter eggs. So, Chris, what do we got this week?
So the first thing, we know this title for the episode was Sins of the Father. It's kind of a common title in DC comic arcs. First arc of James Robinson's 1990 Starman run was titled Sins of the Father. There was an episode of the new Batman Adventures entitled Sins of the Father as well, which was the first appearance of the Tim Drake Robin. And in the 1990s Flash, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point, or at least the Crimson Comet folks will, there was a title episode of Sins of the Father there as well.
Neil, what we got next?
The next one is an Easter egg that we've seen before, but I gotta say, when I saw it on the screen, I squeed again, I'll be honest. We got a close-up of the T-spheres this time, with the calculator handling one and Felicity putting it back on the dock. I'm excited. So again, when Mr. Terrific actually dons the costume, these are going to be a trademark of his character. They're saying it's a single piece of aluminum or steel, did they say? Communications device, but it's going to do so much more. So that was pretty damn cool.
Like fourth generation Bluetooth. Yeah. All right. The next bit of Easter egg is something that happens in every single episode. There's always a corner with street names that comes out, and some are meaningless, at least to us. You know, we haven't found the Easter egg, but sometimes we figure out what it is, don't we, Chris?
We do, and in this case, they mentioned Greg Rucka because we were at the intersection of 7th and Rucka.
And why is Greg Rucka important?
Well, he's important because he did co-create Nyssa.
Ooh.
And Greg Rucka is one of the most dynamic creators out there right now. He's doing so much great stuff, not only with the big two, but tons of independent projects as well. If you're a comics fan, you know, just take a look at the projects that Greg Rucka has on the go right now. You'll be blown away, I guarantee it.
And talking about being blown away, Chris, what is our final Easter egg of the episode?
People got Skywalker, and by that I mean they lost arms or hands. We did see Malcolm lost his hand. A lot of people think that's an homage to Oliver Queen in the Dark Knight Frank Miller arc where Oliver's missing an arm, and maybe just kind of a hint towards the Oliver we're going to see in Legends of Tomorrow where he's also missing an arm.
Mm-hmm. So great stuff. Okay, so we're going to transition into the news. And the first thing is not really a news article. We're just going to talk non-spoilerly, so I don't know how in-depth we can get, but we have to pay homage to this week's Flash episode. So, Neil, what can you say about it that is spoiler-free?
Spoiler-free.
I know.
In past episodes, we've seen that when somebody travels through a speed cannon or an interdimensional rift to other places in the multiverse, they've seen different images. Now, okay, minor spoiler, and we know that the name of this episode is Welcome to Earth 2, I believe, for the Flash. So, and they were gearing up for it last episode. The Flash crew or a couple of members of Team Flash go to Earth 2. And as they did before, there are visions in the speed cannon tunnel, and they are pretty amazing from an interconnected DC universe perspective. And I think that's what we can talk about. There are things that fans have speculated about whether or not everything in the DC small screen universe is connected. And by putting those elements into this episode, the writers, Greg Berlanti, and everybody for DC TV has confirmed all these universes are connected.
So this episode kind of explains why they put out the press release last week about the Flash crossover with Supergirl, because it could be construed a very minor spoiler. You kind of get an idea of how they're going to set that up with what happens in this episode, which was pretty sweet.
It's a great way to handle it, because they've been trying to parse things off separately, and they're like, well, we can actually bring it together. So yeah, that has been out in the news, so that is a spoiler that we could talk about, that there will be some crossovers, but they probably won't be in the means of the Flaro universe, as it's called. So we'll just see how that all goes off. Now, there was a lot of toys that the creative team had to play with in this week's Flash episode, and I'm kind of jealous that they got the toys and Arrow did not, especially since a lot of the toys came from Arrow.
Yes. Boy, trying to keep it non-spoilery.
I guess that's my beef, right? Is they're giving all these toys, these one-off toys in some cases, to Flash that were created in Arrow, and we don't get to see them again in Arrow. And it's like, hey, really? You guys are just, you're kicking a dead horse, or you're kicking a horse when it's down.
So this one doesn't bother me as much because, number one, the characters can exist across the shows. We've seen that happen before. It's not as common. But number two, this is kind of an Elseworlds tale you're getting, where you're crossing into another world. So it doesn't bother me as much if I see someone who's really an Arrow character show up there, because in that universe, it kind of makes sense that they might not be in Star City at that point. They could be in Central City or something like that. So it doesn't bother me there, because this is the exception to the norm. But if we had them regularly showing up on Flash on Earth 1 instead of showing up on Arrow, then that's a little more irksome for me.
You know what this did for me? And it caused me to take a sec back. So I know what you're talking about, SP. Man, we're being cryptic here, guys. I know what you're talking about. And I did feel a pang of regret when I saw that. I wouldn't say I was annoyed. It was like, ah, damn. What I thought, though, is, listen, at some point, and I hope it's not a jump the shark moment, but if they do a small screen convergence, it would be finally a way to say, hey, listen, maybe we need to spice this up. Maybe somebody's ratings have fallen off, but maybe we want it back. Maybe, you know, who knows, BVS flops. I honestly don't see that happening. But, you know, they say, listen, let's put our eggs back in the small screen basket. Boom, convergence. Things happen in a convergence event. It's not just the same character assumes. If you take a look at or a crisis event or a convergence event, there are elements of the multiverse characters that get brought forward. So bring them all into one universe, even people who we've lost in the Arrow universe, bring the Earth 2 version and change their personality somewhat. Bring the Earth 5, if that's what we're saying, where Supergirl is, and reinvigorate small screen. I thought that would be cool, and the doors open.
The one last thing I'll say about this is the thought went through my head. All this is happening to Arrow right now, and the Flash fans are not feeling the pain, because what Flash is doing is not directly related to current items in the DC Cinematic Universe. what happens when it gets closer to the Flash movie? I think you're going to really irritate a lot of Flash fans if they do the same thing.
Probably.
Yeah. So, you guys have anything else to say about that? I've said my piece.
Yeah, last thought on this episode of Flash. You know there's a lot of cool stuff that goes on when you go to comicbook.com to read the Easter egg breakdown, and it is greater than 20 slides of Easter eggs for a one-hour show.
Yeah. I typically don't get to watch Flash until after we do this podcast. A lot of time it's either Friday night or Saturday morning. I had heard so much about this, and to everybody's credit, nobody spoiled anything except for the Supergirl thing, which was out last week. So I actually had to watch it before we did this podcast because I'm like, you know what, guys, we need to talk about this because it is such a big deal. And we'll see how it goes forward because we're still going to get more of it starting on next week. So, Neil, any last things?
No, it was an amazing episode. I'm proud that it's the sister show, and I'm proud that without Arrow, there would be no Flash. Let's be honest.
It's true. It's true. Without Encounter at Farpoint, there would be no All Good Things.
Or Best of Both Worlds.
That's true, too. Or Yesterday's Enterprise, Inner Light. We can go on naming great episodes all the time. Of course, we're talking about...
There would be no Borg without Encounter at Farpoint.
And then you couldn't have done like 2/3 of Star Trek Voyager.
Which wouldn't have been a bad thing.
You guys are so bad. I like that show. Of course, I'm the fuddy-duddy that liked episode one.
Yeah. Hey, we've got some more news. Let's run through it. Chris, I gotta say that I think you picked up on this next story, and we'll all have something to say about it.
This one hurts my heart, guys. It hurts my heart a lot. I guess Mark Guggenheim was doing an exchange on Tumblr with some fans, and kind of made an aside when people said, man, we really want to see Deathstroke back. And he said, well, we're probably not going to get him. And why? Directly, according to Mark Guggenheim, he says, the character of Slade Wilson is currently tied up in another DC project. What another DC project is? We don't know. There's rumors he's going to appear in the Suicide Squad movie. Who knows? But damn it, I want Manu Bennett back as Slade Wilson. He's the best villain they've had on Arrow. And this really is like a knife to my heart to hear that. I wasn't expecting it because he's busy on Shannara Chronicles, but man.
Neil McDonough comes close, but yeah, I'd have to agree.
Yeah, and it was telling how they said it. They didn't say, well, you know, Manu Bennett is busy on another project, which they could have said. They said, Slade Wilson is tied up in another DC project.
Let's be honest. Do you think Manu Bennett wouldn't come back for a small arc or something like that if they asked him to?
Yeah, he totally would. Talking about people who are coming back.
This one made me happy. I sent this to our group. I am a huge fan of Cupid. She is a great character. She is a pure Arrow villain. She's not a Batman villain. She's not a Teen Titans villain. She is an Arrow villain. Created by the same team that is bringing this. Mark Guggenheim created her. So Cupid is coming back. And I say, yes, more Cupid, please. Thank you.
And I have to say, Amy Gumenic, I don't know if that's how you actually say her last name, so if I said it wrong, I apologize, is freaking awesome in that role. She plays crazy so well, but at the same time, you almost feel bad for her.
Yeah, it's fun. She was a cop, right? That got turned?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So that's going to be, I did like her character. It was just crazy bad. It was at that point where you just had some just crazy bad villains, and Oliver was struggling with his identity and stuff, and it was all great.
What's really cool is that SP, you just re-released the remastered episode of that episode, I think maybe over the holiday break.
Yeah,
so I just listened to the old Starling Tribune crew putting that one out. So if you have a chance to listen to our back catalog, listener, go back and check out what the guys had to say. It was fun, and now it's topical.
And basically, to sum it up, we love Cupid.
We did. We did very much. Well, talking about women that we love in the DC universe, there was a synopsis for February. This is the important part. February 24th, right, Neil?
Yep. 2 weeks from yesterday, I guess. We're going to be getting Taken. So again, apparently Vixen has a very specific set of skills. It's going to be her air date on February 24th. And the synopsis is Oliver realizes that he needs help battling Damian Dark. So he calls in an old friend, Vixen. Using her magical ability to summon animal powers, Vixen gets a lock on Dark's location and the team goes to war. Meanwhile, Thea has a heart-to-heart talk with Malcolm. So, we know that in 2 weeks, Malcolm is still alive. Thea is still alive. Damian Dark is still at large. And I don't think we expected that to be resolved in the next two episodes anyways.
There's like 23 episodes in the season. We're at episode 13, so we've got 10 left.
Exactly.
And we got another break coming up anyways, because I'm sure they'll do one for spring break or something too. So they're going to do something that makes us simmer over that time period. That's when something bad's going to happen.
What is it? We can't call it the mid-season finale. It's the three-quarter season finale, the mid-mid-season, the mid-post-season, the mid... what would you call it?
The afternoon nap.
And I'm no old. I like my afternoon naps. You know those days where you just got to sneak out to the car to go check the phone or something? Yeah, I like those days.
But here's the question. So, Vixen is canon, right? The Vixen CW Seed animated series is canon, just like the comic book season 2.5 is canon. Now, I can guarantee that the majority of the the show watchers have not watched the online-only animated series. If they assume that everybody has done it, and listen, in the show notes, it says, or in an old friend, Vixen, they are assuming that people know they have met, they have interacted, you know, how her powers work, perhaps. I'm curious how they're going to handle this.
I'm not. I mean, we've already seen what happened last episode when you had Nyssa and Katana. Like, they're fighting until the word Oliver Queen comes out. I mean, he unites the women superheroes of the DC universe. Oh, it's Oliver Queen? Well, we need to go help him.
It's just like Clark Kent in Smallville, man. Ladies love Oliver, and they loved Clark.
Yeah, baby. All right. So we're going to transition into some relevant Legends of Tomorrow news. And the first one, you know how we have had the Queen Tower, which erroneously showed up in the Gotham universe? I think it was the pilot episode. Yeah.
It was the pilot.
So what do we have in Legends of Tomorrow, Neil?
We have the Smoke Tower. So obviously, Felicity, she's done pretty well for herself. So if we assume that it's Palmer Tech has been renamed, you know, Smoke Tech, which would probably be a better name to the truth. Felicity has made her mark on Star City and the world. And, you know, if we know our lady, who would expect anything less?
I mean, it's cool to see. She's going to amount to something in that world, too. It makes sense.
Felicity in any universe is awesome. Even if it's evil Felicity, she's got me.
Ooh, Earth 2 Felicity. Yeah, I'd be down with that.
Do like Earth 2 Caitlin Snow. That's all I'm going to say.
So who would be the best hacker? Earth 2 Felicity or Earth 1 Felicity?
I'd go Earth 2 because Darkseid would allow her to like create human loss distractions that would tie things up. I think Earth 2 Felicity's got the edge.
So would Earth 2 Felicity be in a wheelchair?
I was about to say, well, maybe not, but she'd have a goatee, but I don't want that.
I like Overwatch better than whatever Felicity in Earth 2 is going to be. So talking about another Legends of Tomorrow, we have the 2046 Green Arrow synopsis, right, Chris?
That's right. That came out just this week. And the synopsis for that episode of Legends Tomorrow, the team encounters a very different Oliver Queen. When a malfunction sends the Wave Rider crashing into 2046 Star City, our heroes face a startling version of their own future, where they never stop Savage and never return home. The city is in ruins and overrun by criminals, which thrills Rory. Sarah is despondent over the destruction of her home and stunned when she learns what happened to her old friend, Oliver Queen, guest star Stephen Amell. So Grant gets to go to Supergirl and Stephen Amell gets to go to Legends Tomorrow. I think it's fair.
Sure. I'm current on Supergirl, by the way, and it's a lighter show, right? It's not as dark.
It's because it's Earth 5.
Or complex as Flash, but I like it. It's my speed. I like it. Oh, okay. And besides, Melissa, hot in that costume. So after, you know, I was listening to our episode today of 2 weeks ago, you know, when the wall bit it, I was like, aww. So this story is definitely timely for me. Neil, what do we got?
So Den of Geek, one of the geek news sites out there, actually did a retrospective looking back at Amanda Waller's top 11 moments from the series. And it was great to see the wall in the series as she's left her mark on the Arrowverse. And I'm not going to run through all of them, but it talks about the hotel ambush, episode 16, season 2. Shadows are for lurking at season 1, episode 22, all the way through to the infamous drone strike that everybody raised a glass to. And in retrospect, raising a glass to a drone strike, maybe questionable, but I'll join her in that one.
Well, I mean, that's the most memorable moment, and since she's now passed away in the Arrow universe, might as well.
Do you remember when she blew Shrapnel's head up with that neck bomb? Oh,
the memories.
On this podcast, we always said that we didn't believe that Shrapnel was dead, but I guess now we'll never know. To the lighter side of the news, we have a little funny for you, don't we, Chris?
We do. John Barrowman posted a video on his Facebook page of after this episode was done filming, he's having a dance-off with none other than Katrina Law, who plays Nyssa, and it's pretty darn funny. And if you know John Barrowman, dude's got some moves.
So does Nyssa. Katrina Law. Yeah. Okay, so that's it with the news, but we do have some more Katrina Law. She did an interview for this episode, and I took a moment to go read it, and there was a couple of key things with it. First of all, everybody's wondering about her relationship with Sarah, and she commented on the relationship that she doesn't think they'll ever get back together, not because Nyssa doesn't care for Sarah, but because she knows that because of the bloodlust that Sarah has got, had to go on her separate path, and she's developing into a different person than she was when she was with Nyssa. So she doesn't expect the two ever to get back together. And I think that it makes me happy and sad. It makes me sad because we don't get to see him. I think they would have been an awesome power couple on the show. But it's happy because it's recognizing character development, which is the key to any series, I think.
I have to agree with you, yeah.
And then the second little interview was basically the DC All Access. Will Overwatch get a super suit? And so I'll just leave that on the floor. You're going to have to watch it. It's 4.5 minutes. It's worth it. We talk comics and toy news. And what do we got on that, Neil?
Well, this week in DC Comics, there was no Green Arrow comic release, nor was there a Black Canary. But every once in a while, we get a re-release or a graphic novel that comes out. And this week, DC has re-released a classic Justice League story from Brad Metzler called Identity Crisis. And we've actually talked about this on this cast before because it's Arrow-centric, but Green Arrow also plays a big part in it. So if you've picked up an older version of the graphic novel, this is Identity Crisis right here if you're watching our video. It has an all-new cover now in the digital release on Comixology. I'm sure there will be extra goodies in the back of it. I'm probably not going to pick this one up as I have a hard copy of it, but there's a lot of great Green Arrow in it. If you're an Arrow fan, there's a lot of great Ray Palmer. This story really impacts Ray and it really impacts Green Arrow. So definitely worth reading Identity Crisis if you haven't read it.
It's a great story.
So I was at the comic book store yesterday, and they just rearranged their wall of graphic novels, and I noticed it on there because I was like, oh, hey, what? Because they rearrange it every week, whatever, try to catch your eye and buy some. I was like, ooh, that looks nice. So if it's still there next week, I might get it. And also, I have to note that Flash 49 came out yesterday. So yeah, if you're a Flash comic fan and you haven't picked it up, it is out now. So what do we got in the toy area?
Well, New York Toy Fair is just around the corner, so we're going to see a lot of great releases. We talked about just this week, the Felicity Smoke Funko Pop was released on February 10th. But new for this week is a new Green Arrow collector figure from the 112 line. It's gorgeous. We've put the links in the show notes. If you're a fan of classic Green Arrow, it's a gorgeous figure. Definitely check this one out from the 1:12 ratio line. So
awesome. Looking forward to checking that out. I haven't done that yet. So we had some awesome feedback this week. Thank you very much to everybody. I see Ray Ray in the chat. That is at RayMoney33 on Twitter. He says, I've been rewatching every Arrow episode and then listening to your recap. You guys are awesome. And I have to say thank you on behalf of all of us. And by all of us, I do include Wing and Jay. And Yes, I will even include JS in that because he was part of it, as well as Chris and Neil. It has been a fun ride these last few years. I have to thank Wing for actually creating it, but thank you very much for listening and then getting some sort of enjoyment out of listening to us babble about enjoying the show. So thank you very much. Also, Calvin on Twitter. Do you guys remember this? You guys remember what when I was telling this to you, Neil, last week?
Yes.
So we've started a hashtag war, apparently, and then it's hashtag microphone in your pants. Sounds like a podcaster pickup line. So, yeah, everything we say has got a double entendre, if you haven't picked up on that. Just saying. And then on Facebook, we've been posting some Facebook stuff, and some pretty significant news has come out. We posted the Deathstroke story on our Facebook feed with the caption, DC just doesn't, quote unquote, get it sometimes. So Steven Wandrew, the wonderful owner of the Gonna Geek Network, said, the Slade-Wilson storylines are some of the best stories in all of the Arrowverse. I think that it's important for people to remember the history of the universe, CW, and this feels like a kick in the face to that. I have always enjoyed Batman and Superman movies to some degree, and I really enjoyed Man of Steel. However, actions like this, if true, kind of make me wish that the upcoming films flop and then we'd see them disappear for a decade. Yeah, I said it. Guys, that's pretty strong words.
That's an overreaction.
It is, but let's be honest. When you see the movie, you maybe watch it once or twice. So you've got 4 hours of content. Let's be generous. Let's give it 5 if it's a 2.5 hour movie. Okay, let's be really generous and say that you buy the DVD and watch it once again. Right? There's so much content out
with
there.
With the commentary.
With the commentary. There we go. All right. So watch it twice on Blu-ray, one with, once without. All right. So now we're talking 10 hours of content. That's less than half a season of a TV show. There's just so much more that they can give us in a season of TV. But the problem is, you know, money talks. I know that, right? They're going to make more with the movie, but the TV show is going to have a longer impact. It's going to have multi-year, multi-generational throughout the season. People are going to be able to jump in and jump out. Once the movie is at the theater, if you haven't bought the Blu-ray or if it's not streaming, you're not going to have that instant kind of access and the desire to dig into the broader DC universe. So it's sad, but at the end of the day, you can't argue with box office revenue.
I think we've enjoyed a golden age of streaming over the past 5 years, and I think we're starting to come to the end of it. I think we're getting what we wanted 10 years ago when the cable prices started to ratchet up and that we can buy individual content, but that means we have to buy the individual content as it comes out, streaming on CBS. Like CBS is already doing it, right? They've pulled Supergirl from Hulu. You have to get the CBS streaming. So in any event, I think you're right. And I think we have to be cautious of how we go forward. I agree with everything up to when he says, and I think he just said it for theatrical effect because you know Steven, he's very flamboyant, even more so than me. He said that the upcoming films flop and we see them disappear for a decade. I was almost there, right? The one thing that has saved me from it is when I saw the scene in the trailer of Wonder Woman coming to Superman and Batman's rescue, and I was like, that is a reason for me to actually see, because I wasn't going to go see it in the theater. I probably won't go see it the opening weekend. I'll probably see it the second weekend or something like that, but that is the reason why I would go see it rather than catch it on Blu-ray later.
Yeah, so when Steven has that reaction at the end, that's why I said overreaction, because I had a similar thought at very first when I read this. I was like, oh, those SOBs, I want Deathstroke in here. And this really makes me mad that this is what's keeping it from me. And then when my temper cooled a little bit or a more rational thought came back to me, I was like, kind of knew this was going to happen. It is what it is. I don't want to wish ill on that, because when we get that first comic book movie that comes from a big group that really flops, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt everyone, including the TV side of things, potentially, because then all the talk you'll hear about is, hey, this DC, not DC, the superhero bubbles popped. Look, Batman v Superman did bad. Everything's screwed now.
I don't think Batman versus Superman is going to do bad, although I do have my qualms about some of the secondary movies that are coming up. So we'll just see.
Fair enough.
Okay. We got a great iTunes review a couple weeks ago by Rotov. And Neil, you want to read this one off?
Sure. Listener Rotav wrote in iTunes, "I love listening each week. The insight and fun they bring is truly great for any fan of CW's Arrow. Just go ahead, do yourself a favor and subscribe now and get the latest Arrow news and discussion." So listener Rotav, thank you very much for that review on iTunes. It means a lot. You know, and again, if you listen to Stargate Pioneer on the Better Podcasting show, you'll know that the majority of downloads are still done, despite lots of different ways to consume this, through the Apple infrastructure. So, you know, giving us that 5-star review, giving us great comments on iTunes really helps. So we really appreciate it, guys.
Yeah. So great new fans like Ray can come and find us and enjoy the content as well. So we really do appreciate it. Thank you very much. So, Chris, since we're Neil mentioned it, you know, I've got another show on the network called Better Podcasting. I know you have a couple other shows on the network, and I know Neil is also on another show on the network. So we have this great network. Why don't you tell us about something on the network?
So we like to remind you guys each week that we are part of the Gunna Geek Network, and we like to highlight an episode of something awesome that's on the network. And this week we're going to talk about episode 131 of the GunnaGeek.com podcast entitled Hangout 7, SpaceX, Mars 2025, and Smithsonian Enterprise Restoration Update. Lots of stuff going on. In this week's episode, we discuss the status of the Smithsonian Enterprise Restoration Project, SpaceX, and the drive to hit Mars by 2025. Hangout 7 and backtracking on SMS integration to wrap things up. Finally, we dust off our game show set to play another episode of Geek Wars.
Got a lot of singing this cast. It's great. I just want to thank our, as we wrap up tonight, I just want to thank our listeners and viewers. Thank you very much for downloading us, whether it's on Spreaker, the replay on YouTube or Blab. And I want to thank, again, our video editor, Chris, because he does an amazing job. I don't have time. I do this kind of the same thing on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., but he does it much better. So thank you very much, Chris.
Well, happy to help, gentlemen.
Great. And I'd love to thank the live participants in the Blab chat. Guys, thank you very much for dropping in at Cajun Sean, at RayMoney33, at Brian G. Fairway, at StarSaber underscore 222, all of our live fans that come join us and chat with us. It really does make the show more exciting. We love getting your live feedback. If you would like to join us, please, we're on the blab.im streaming service. You can come and join live Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and just search for Starling Tribune and you'll find us. And don't forget that after the show, we open up the fourth seat on the Blab interface for our live listeners to hang out and share their thoughts. You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network on geeks.live. And the next show that you can catch on geeks.live is the network's All Things Good and Nerdy show, Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern time with our very own Chris.
That's me.
Don't forget, we talked about it before, but it's very important to review, rate, and subscribe. And a 5-star review on iTunes is actually increases the searchability when people actually go and view on this stuff. It really does help out. And we really would appreciate do that for us. And like us on Facebook. You guys can interact with us on Facebook. That's a great place to drop comments that other people can come in and see as well. And on YouTube. And you can always badger us on Twitter like Ray did this week. So really appreciate that. Thanks.
And I know we mentioned this a lot, but don't forget you can find all our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network. Just head on over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And while you're there, check out the forums, check out some of our other great shows. Tons of content there. We've got something to tickle whatever your geek fancy is. If you want to share your thoughts on what you've heard on the Starling Tribune, though, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or give us a call at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283.
Guys, I think it's fair to say this was another great episode and tons of fun to hang out and podcast with you guys. So that about wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off and open up the Blab interface to our live listeners? At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Skywalkered.
At Stargate Pioneer.
William.
And I am at Neil Isn't Witty, signing off with hashtag hand. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.